dude! We're totally gonna kill you now.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Cinema Crespo Diso. Can you believe it? 8 episodes, that's 2 full months of camaraderie with you via podcasting delight. Or something like that. I am your host, Christopher Crespo, film critic, writer, and, you know, doer of other things. With me as always is my co-host, overall good guy, number 2 man, the Ed McMahon to my Carson. Andy Richter, to Mark Conan, they call him Dr. Drew, a.k.a. Drewski, a.k.a. Drucifer, a.k.a. Some people call him Andrew Betteridge, a.k.a. Drewster Cogburn.
What's up, Chris? How's it going?
I wasn't done. A.k.a. Am I missing one?
I don't think so.
Damn it.
I don't think you're missing any of my many pseudonyms.
How's it going, Drew?
It's going, dude.
Yeah?
What's up?
Not much, man. Not much. Sorry I had to pull you away from your Sunday ritual of making homemade jams and oregano-infused oils. You know, I know that's what you do on Sundays.
Yeah, every Sunday.
But, hey, this has to get done.
I know. It's okay.
We gotta bring the podcasting to the people.
The jams and oils can wait.
What are you doing exactly?
I'm just making some oregano-infused oil and some strawberry jam because stuff was on sale and or free.
Nice. Good deal. Good deal, dude.
So I might as well use it if I got it.
Well, hey, might as well. You are a culinary master of sorts.
Of sorts is correct.
Of sorts. But let's get into, before we get into our thing, our host show format, we have a couple of things from the corrections department. Corrections department, check it in.
Oh, man, corrections department.
First off, with the corrections department, last week, the Netflix instant pick of the week was Flame and Citron.
Yes.
Flame and Citron is no longer on the instant service.
Oh.
Available only via DVD at this point. Netflix does this thing where they put movies on and then they take them off. And then they put them on later and then they take them off. It's very annoying with no rhyme or reason either. No apparent rhyme or reason. As to why they do that. Pretty annoying, man.
Well, unfortunately. Well, maybe these people should just get it on the disc service. It's a disc-worthy movie.
It is a disc-worthy movie. I mean, I'd get it on disc, so. I'm sorry about that. My Netflix instant pick of the week is just a normal Netflix DVD pick of the week. With not everyone does, but they screw it. Also, from the corrections department, last week I said Jack the Giant Slayer. The
yes.
Fairy Tale Jack the Giant Slayer was a sequel to Jack and the Beanstalk.
Correct.
That's not really true. It's not a sequel. They are loosely related.
Okay.
But they're like still separate tales of Jack and Giants, which is one involves a Beanstalk and one. Actually, Jack the Giant Slayer, the original tale, does not involve a Beanstalk. Just Jack killing Giants.
All right.
Yep. So there you go, corrections department.
That guy's kind of a dick.
Who, Jack?
No, the corrections department guy.
Oh, well.
Whoever he is.
Yeah, so, you know, he's government paid.
I know.
Yeah, it's a government service. All right, well, we're going to get into the show here. Show format, as always, is we'll talk about the weekend in box office. We'll review it. We'll review some movies, and then we'll see what's coming out in theaters, what's coming out on DVD, and then the Crespo Disco, and then the Crespo Dome. But before we do that, the Netflix instant pick of the week. Here we go. Let's got the randomizer. There we go. All right. Drew, if you will do us the honor, sir.
Not a problem.
Of this week's instant pick of the week, which we will verify whether or not it is on the instant. And what we got? What we got? What we got? What we got? What we got?
Marathon Man.
Marathon Man. Ooh, I hope that should be on there. That's a perennial instant. I see it on there all the time. Please still be on there. That's a good one. I want to talk about Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman.
And we're
checking slowly.
Waiting.
And we're waiting and we're buffering.
And buffering.
It's hard to get good internet service out here on international waters. Gotta get that air card.
Well,
it would say the blue and instant queue.
Yeah, it's in blue.
So if it's in blue, it says play. Or in instant queue or whatever, in queue.
You know, it says in DVD queue.
What is it in blue? There's a red one and a blue one. Red means DVD, blue means... Oh, no, it's not on there anymore.
I guess I'm colorblind.
That's why we're checking. You are colorblind. It was red. It would be blue. Oh, my goodness. Marathon Man, not on the instant. That's two picks in a row. That's why we're checking now. Oh, that sucks.
Would you like to talk about Marathon Man?
Maybe in a minute. Let's see. We'll put a pin in that one and we'll come back to it.
All right. Well, let's see if this other one is. I'm not even going to say what it is until I figure out.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, while you're checking, Marathon Man's a great movie from the 70s with Dustin Hoffman. It's one of these 70s paranoia thrillers involving diamonds and some like ex-Nazi on the run and stuff. I highly, highly recommend. That's worth getting on DVD and checking out.
All right. This week's new instant pick of the week is Flirting with Disaster.
Flirting with Disaster. Okay. Verified. It's on there. We're good to go. Let me write that one down. Ugh. That's what happens when you do these live, you know?
Uh-huh.
That's the whole beauty of the randomizer. 9,000. Flirting with Disaster. Okay. Well, Flirting with Disaster is David O. Russell. All right. The guy who made Silver Linings Playbook, The Fighter, I Heart Huckabees, Three Kings. This is his, I guess, his first romantic comedy. Yeah, you can call it a... Yeah, it's sort of a romantic comedy. It has Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller's a dude who... he was adopted, and as he's an adult, he wants to find his biological parents, so he hires this woman, Tia Leone, to reunite him with his parents, and they go on a trip to find out who his parents, real parents are. And, of course, things go horribly wrong.
Of course.
Ben Stiller is married to, I think it's Patricia Arquette?
Yes.
They're a couple, and, of course, you know, this is the mid-90s, so, no, late 90s. So, Ben Stiller and Tia Leone, they're like, there's some sexual tension there. Josh Brolin?
Correct.
And Richard Jenkins play FBI agents, I think. FBI? Yeah, I think they're FBI agents. Who they somehow get roped into the whole thing. They're both great. They're both great in it. Alan Alda and Lily Tomlin play... it's not really giving anything away, but they play the eventual, like, the real parents that Ben Stiller finds, and he finds them in the end, like, towards the third act, that they kick off the third part of the movie, which gets wild. It's a wild movie. For a romantic comedy, things get pretty out of control. It's a lot of fun, and it's David O. Russell. I love me some David O. Russell.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Flirting with Disaster. Oh, man. Oh, that Marathon Man. Oh, man, I can't believe... That's two movies in a row. That's why we got that up there. Good job, Drew.
Thank you.
Good checking. So the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week is officially Flirting with Disaster. You can see that and my previous picks, if they're still on there, at chriscrespo.com. Let's get into the box office results for the weekend, Drew. What do you say?
Sounds good to me. All right, starting at number five this week, we have Snitch, which had a weekend gross of $7.7 million for a total gross of $24.4.
Again, mystery budget.
Mystery budget.
No idea. I'm going to say it cost them around $30 to $40 million.
All right, so they've almost broken even then?
Domestically, yeah. They'll make a little more, I think. I'll make a little bit internationally. I mean, The Rock is something of a worldwide star. And then, you know. Home video, DVD, streaming, all that stuff, it'll make its money. I'm sure it's a cheap enough movie where it'll make some money. And then there'll be a Snitch 2 direct-to-video sequel, like involving some sort of some other family or, you know, 20-year mandatory minimum. Like, oh, now you got to save your daughter from, you know, yeah.
Or your wife.
Right. And it'll be starring John Cena. Yeah.
Snitch 2.
Snitch 2. But Stitch is an okay movie. It's not bad. I say that's something to check out when it hits Redbox, you know. It's definitely a Redboxy type movie, for sure. If you want to hear my review, you can listen to last week's show of Cinema Crespo Do So. If you want to read my review, which I get a little more into detail, chriscrespo.com. Got my review up there. Number four movie, Drew.
Number four this week, we had The Last Exorcism Part 2, which had a weekend gross of $8 million. For total gross, $8 million on a budget of $5 million.
Not bad. A preposterously titled The Last Exorcism
Part 2.
Part 2.
That doesn't
the next
make
exorcism
sense. How is it? I guess it's not the last exorcism then, is it?
I guess the last one lied to us. The last one was a big old lie, is what they're saying. I saw the last exorcism. That was okay. Really don't want to see this non-found footage sequel. Not even getting good reviews. So, nail
like
in the coffin. There,
big old stinker.
Sounds like a big old stinker. I ain't going to bother with it. Really, besides for it having a stupid title and it being really cheap, there's not much else to say.
Yeah. All right, number three this week, we have 21 and Over that had a weekend gross of $9 million for a total gross of $9 million on a budget of 13. Another really cheap movie.
Yeah, this is the party movie. A couple of dudes convince a third dude on his 21st birthday to go out and get
super
wrecked.
Super wasted.
Yep, it's written and directed by the guys who wrote The Hangover, the first one.
Okay.
So if that gives you know, if there's a reason why it kind of feels a little hangover-y.
Yeah.
It's written by the same guys. But, you know, with teenagers and, I don't know, looks
kind of silly.
Looked pretty silly. Looked pretty dumb. Reviews, the general consensus, that's a redundancy. The consensus, the general opinion, either or, pick one. Not good. Not good at all. Not enough to make me want to go out and be like, oh, let's go check this out.
Take my money here.
But I did find something pretty interesting about 21 and Over.
Okay.
I found this article from the LA Times.
All right.
It's kind of long, so I picked out some things I'm going to read.
You're going to paraphrase?
I'm going to paraphrase. I'm going to read almost half the article. So if you'll indulge me.
Yes.
All right. This is from the LA Times. Let's see. February 14th by Amy Kaufman and Steven Zaitchik. The title of it is For the Raunchy 21 and Over, A Very Different Message in China. All right. Because the lead character, the kid.
Asian.
Is an Asian guy. All right. He's a Chinese kid. So here we go. When audiences turn out for 21 and Over in theaters beginning March 1st, they'll see a celebration of a prominent aspect of the American college experience, the one involving beer pong, pep rallies, and sexually liberated sorority girls. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
Sounds like college.
Uh-huh.
The film's Chinese audiences, however, will be exposed to a different message, the perils of a hedonistic West and the importance of embracing one's roots.
Nice.
You see where this one's going.
Oh, yeah.
That's because two different versions of the R-rated Hollywood comedy have been cut. There's a version that most of the world will see that takes place entirely in the U.S. and expounds on the joys of campus distraction. And in addition, for Chinese moviegoers, that contains a more wholesome message. It's the result of an initiative by the Ryan Kavanaugh-led Relativity Media. Relativity Media is a production company. You'll see their name in front of a lot of movies. Shortly before shooting began at the University of Washington last year, Relativity executives told filmmakers and cast to plan on a trip to the city of Linyi in Shandong province. I think I said that for you, right? Once they wrapped here, Kavanaugh had brokered a larger deal with a consortium of Chinese companies, including the government-owned Huashua Film Distribution Company. I think I butchered that one. That, among other benefits, would yield partial funding for the $12 million comedy. The website says 13. This article has it at 12, so roughly 12 to 13. The scenes shot there are now going into a substantially different cut customized for China. So basically, Relativity Media, the company that produced the film, brokered a deal with several Chinese companies to get distribution in China for this movie, but they have to change the movie. Here's the deal in China. We all know it's communist China. Government controls everything. But they're also lately have been doing this weird capitalist communism.
Over the last couple decades, they've been doing that.
Yeah, so pretty much ever since they got Hong Kong back from the British, and they've opened up their importing, exporting. They've used their numbers, their amount of people that they have to actually make some money for the government. I don't know if that's making its way back to the people.
No.
I don't think it is.
No, negatory.
Part of what the government does, they have all the film stuff on lockdown, too. They really only allow about 20 foreign films, foreign meaning outside of China, to be played in Chinese theaters. And they can do that because the government owns
all the theaters.
Pretty much all the theaters and the distribution companies in China. And then there's also the Chinese Film Review Board. If you want your movie to play in the theater, it's got to go in front of the review board, blah, blah, blah. So, you know,
yeah.
If a movie has anything bad to say against the government,
not going to happen.
Oh, boy. Good luck, buddy. To be one of the 20 movies to come out in China this year, this Kavanaugh fella, he got his little $12 million party film released in China, but with some changes, all right? So here we go. Blah, 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 blah. 21 and Over follows three male undergrads, including the overachieving Jeff Chang, as they step out for a night of debauchery to commemorate Chang's milestone birthday. The trio go on to cement their friendship by drinking themselves into oblivion and hooking up with a series of women, but where the American edition ultimately celebrates youthful independence in the face of familial expectation and generally glorifies Greek life, the Chinese version communicates a very different lesson. 21 and Over in China is sort of a story about a boy who leaves China, gets corrupted by our wayward Western partying ways, and goes back to China a better person, Lucas said. Lucas is one of the writer directors, right? So this is from his own mouth. The directors included new scenes at the start and end to make that point. In the Chinese version, Chang starts out at a Chinese college campus and returns there at the end of the film after what turns out to be an ill-conceived stint as a transfer student in the U.S. In 21 and Over, the new scenes not only give the film a different feel, but in fact also actively cast the U.S. in a bad light. So there you go.
Nice.
Selling out their own country to
the Chinese.
Couple extra wands.
Yep.
Let's see here. Just going to wrap this up. It remains to be seen how Chinese audiences will respond to a tailor-made 21 and Over, though relatively hopes that a customized China version will play better to local audiences. In several previous instances involving edited films, enterprising Chinese moviegoers have gone online to compare their version with pirated Western copies and complained about the movie being shown them. So, the consumers there know what's up. They're not stupid. Even though they do have very limited internet access. Chinese Google. You know, it's very... let's see, yeah, blah, 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 and we sold out our country, yeah, so.
All right, awesome. Relatively Media sold out the USA to the Chinese.
It's pretty interesting, you know, to capitulate like that, but that's
a crappy movie, too.
For a crappy movie, apparently, yes. But that's the world we're facing now, where China has become such a large market that a movie can hope to make an extra 10, 15, 20, $25 million. And for a movie that only costs $12 million and might get to only $25 million here in America, another $25 million in won would help balance the books quite nicely, you know. And then maybe it'll pave the way for Relatively Media down the road to broker some more deals with these Chinese consortiums,
so they can sell out the U.S. even more.
Why not? Why not make more movies that blame the U.S. for our hedonistic practices and corrupting the Chinese youth, you know? But then give the rest of the world a different movie that celebrates what we do in this country, you know?
We can have our cake and eat it, too.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, now the more I think about it, feels really disingenuous. Kind of irritating. Kind of makes me want to actively not see this movie and root against it.
Yeah, definitely.
As a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
So
boycott 21 and Over.
Yeah, official Crespo Diso stance, screw 21 and Over and the people that made it. Yeah, not cool, guys. Not cool. Stand by your art. If you can't stand behind your art, then don't make it. What's the number two movie?
Number two movie this week is Identity Thief, with a weekend gross of $9.7 million for a total gross of $107.5 on a budget of $35.
That's a winner.
That is a big winner.
For a movie that's really not that hot.
Yeah, that's what you said.
It's getting really bad reviews. It's getting poorly reviewed. I'd say it's eh. It's, you know, catch it on HBO.
Well, the people seem to like it.
The people generally like it, generally speaking. It's okay. It is what it is. It's a comedy. It's an R-rated comedy. It's the only one that's out there right now. And the only one out there, well, actually, 21 Over, that piece of crap that no one wants to see, is also an R-rated comedy.
It's made almost as much money as Silver Linings Playbook.
Which is something that's very interesting, right? Silver Linings has been out since December. It won a bunch of awards. That's crazy. I almost said cray. That's cray.
I hate you.
In your face. Identity Thief, a lot of money. Good for it. Let's go.
All right. Number one movie this week, Jack the Giant Slayer, with a weekend gross of $28 million which is also its total, on a budget of $195. Wow, that movie cost a lot of money
that
to make.
That was an expensive movie. Summer blockbuster levels of expensive. I saw this film.
Yes.
It's the movie I chose to see this weekend.
But was it worth $195 million?
You know, I could see... It's interesting. I could definitely see, like, halfway through the movie, I was reminded, like, oh, yeah, this is a $200 million movie. Like, some of the things that they were doing with gigantic beanstalks growing up, like, 30,000 feet into the air, you know, airplane height.
Yeah.
And then they're climbing up there, and then there's a whole other world, a world of giants, and then there's, like, 20 or 30 giants running around, CG giants on screen. A lot of money went into it, though. I mean, even just in the armor that the king is wearing, played by Ian McShane, and, you know, just the amount of horses, and that they built a whole set to look like a kingdom, you know, like a Game of Thrones-style kingdom. It definitely looks like a $200 million movie, but it does not feel like a $200 million movie. It doesn't feel... It looks like it should be a big epic. It's a movie about giants in another world battling humans. It feels like it should be a huge epic movie just by definition. But it still has this weird feel of being like almost like a breezy, like this is a pilot for a TV show. It's strange how easy breezy it goes by and how ultimately forgettable most of the movie is. And ugly. It's an ugly movie in terms of like the giants, the CG giants are mm-hmm. really, really ugly looking. Ugly looking things. And they always look really CG too. Like bad cartoons trying to look photoreal. It's just that it's so they're trying to make them look real, but they don't, which makes them hyper. Like even makes them stand out even more.
Yeah,
you know,
makes them look even more fake.
Yeah, it's like ugh, you tried so hard and you still failed and it's not working. A lot of the effects are good. Some of the beanstalk stuff is cool. Like hey, you meet some giant beanstalk stuff.
Yeah,
right. Ewan McGregor is in the movie as like the head of the Royal Guard.
Okay,
he's awesome. Ewan McGregor is always awesome, and this is particularly great. Nicholas Holt, the lead guy who's the zombie dude in Warm Bodies, he's whatever. He's Jack, he plays Jack, he's whatever. Bill Nighy does a motion capture performance for, like, one of the giant dudes.
Nice.
So that's cool, I guess, because it's Bill Nighy. But then the whole time he's a giant, ugly giant anyway.
Yeah.
With a second head.
Nice, two-headed giants.
Yeah.
Always fun.
You know, it's just... It's just that the story itself, it almost felt like it had no reason to exist. It was like, hey, if we take these two disparate, loosely connected fairy tales and make our own crazy story that connects the two, a story about men versus giants, maybe it'll be good enough that we don't have to put that much work. It has like three or four screenwriters, so I don't know what happened, but like all the themes just fell away. It's like, it's one of these movies where Jack just wants to go on an adventure. And then an adventure presents itself, so he goes on the adventure, and he wins, because he's Jack. And there's no other reason why. You know, even in Spaceballs, Lone Star found out he came from some royal heritage. There's a reason for him being so great, you know, and he meets up with Yogurt and all that stuff. He learns about the Schwartz. In Jack, he's nothing. He's just a farm boy in the beginning. At the end, he's still a farm boy who just happens to have some luck, and he kills a couple of giants. So the king is like, oh, yeah, you're good.
That's kind of lame.
It's lame. It's not a very good movie. It's definitely Redbox, if you're curious.
Not curious.
Maybe if you catch on HBO just to see what the hell's going on. Or when it plays on Sci-Fi in 2016, 2017,
uh-huh.
2018. It takes a while for those things to get around the TV. But yeah, I wouldn't. It's not worth seeing in theaters. And it's in 3D, too. I didn't see it in 3D. Because
why?
Right, why? Exactly. Why? That's probably part of the reason why it hit $200 million. Also,
yeah, you're probably right.
It'll probably make some pretty decent money overseas, though. So, and what $30 million opening weekend?
Yeah, 28.
So you're looking at like 28. Say it does a three-time opener, like maybe 90, somewhere between $75 and $90 million here. If it does another, it would have to do like 300 overseas just to break even and include all the marketing and distribution and stuff. So not too hot. This is why Bryan Singer is doing X-Men Days of Future Past, because before, what was this movie before this? The something else. Oh, well, Superman Returns back in 06, which they dumped a lot of money into another $200 million movie that made
wasn't
like,
that good.
It wasn't that good. Made 400 worldwide, so it barely broke even. You know, because you got to, again, add in all the marketing and distribution and stuff. Wasn't very good. They wanted to jumpstart the Superman franchise again. Didn't do it. It's taking them another 7 years about a new Superman movie because of what happened with Superman Returns. That's not good. Between that and this, that's why he's back making X-Men movies, because he needs a surefire hit. He needs something that's guaranteed to make money. Hopefully it'll reignite something in him and make him a good filmmaker again, because we're talking about the guy that made The Usual Suspects. And
great movie.
Come on, you know? And X-Men, and X-Men 2, which are decent movies. And
The first one, not so much the second one.
I like the second one more than the first one. I think the second one aged better than the first one. Sabretooth is a... Eh. I actually prefer Liev Schreiber's Sabretooth in X-Men Origins Wolverine over the wrestler's Sabretooth in X-Men, because at least it was someone that can act.
Yeah, definitely.
But, man, that was a bad movie.
Yeah, it was.
That Origins Wolverine.
Oh, God, it was awful.
So is that's the whole top five?
Yes, sir.
You know what? Stoker came out this weekend in limited theaters. The number 29 movie of the weekend was Stoker.
Nice.
$158,000 this weekend.
Oh, it needed to come out here so it can take some of my money.
It does need to come out here. It only came out on 7 screens this weekend. So,
well, not bad.
7 screens. You can reasonably split that up. 4 in New York, 3 in L.A. Or 4 in L.A., 3 in New York. It's going to be something like that. Or maybe 3 in New York, 3 in L.A., 1 in Chicago. Because Chicago's cool like that.
Nowadays.
No, they've always been pretty hip. They're like the middle ground between the two cities. Whenever they do limited releases, it's always those three cities that get them first.
New York, Chicago, L.A.
Yeah. Yeah, and Chicago is always number 3 in that equation. So, yeah, hopefully only 7 screens. Hopefully they'll bump it up a few hundred next weekend. Usually when a movie gets around the 500-600 theater mark, there's usually one or two around our parts. So we can take it in. So another week or two.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's going to be good. I am too, because for the month of March, it's mostly looking like a bunch of stinkers. There's not really a movie I'm looking forward to until the end of the month. So speaking of which, let's go ahead and talk about the new movies coming out this weekend. On DVD, we have a few new ones. Wreck-It Ralph.
Missed that.
It's supposed to be pretty good. DreamWorks' Wreck-It Ralph. I mean, I've only heard good things about it, actually.
If it's not on the DVD, maybe it'll be on the Redbox.
Oh, it should be. That's definitely a Redboxer. Yeah, yeah. And it's geared towards people around our age range, too, along with people our age who have kids. But, you know, because it's dealing with a lot of arcade and comic book. Not that comic book. Arcade characters from the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids don't know about Q-Bert these days, do they?
No. Well, they might.
They might. Would they? Because there's Q-Bert jokes in it. Red Dawn, the remake, comes out on DVD this week. So if you're some sort of masochist and you hate yourself, you can go ahead and check that out. The Bay is something that I'm kind of interested in. It's a found footage movie, but it's a Barry Levinson found footage movie.
Okay.
And Barry Levinson's he's a pretty good director. It doesn't seem like the type of guy to make a found footage horror film, but that's what he did. And it's a movie about a town where the water is contaminated and the people who drink the water pretty much turn into I don't want to say zombies. More like, you know, like 28 days later.
So they're infected.
Yeah, they become infected and want to like start killing people.
Yeah,
it's either dead or zombies. But it looked pretty good.
That's interesting.
I think it got really good reviews. I remember seeing a trailer for it.
Well, if it comes out on DVD, maybe we should check it out.
It's coming out on DVD on Tuesday. And if you have a Blu-ray player out there, if you're a Blu-ray type person, Westworld comes out on Blu-ray.
Oh, Westworld.
That's a fun movie.
That is a fun. I want them to remake Westworld.
That is a movie worthy of being remade. Yes. Yes, you know they even made a sequel to Westworld?
Really?
Yeah, where they open up a new Westworld theme. Well, Westworld, for people that don't know, Westworld's a movie from the 70s, written and directed by Michael Crichton, writer of Jurassic Park, who, it's a theme park.
It's like Jurassic Park, but it's for the Wild West.
Yeah, well, there's three sections. There's a Wild West section, which is called Westworld. There's like Roman World or something,
yeah,
where it's like old Roman times, and it's all about eating food and getting orgies. And getting into fights with knights and stuff.
Yep.
And then what was the third one?
I forget. Was it medieval?
What's that, the medieval one? That's the one where you're fighting with knights. Yeah,
yeah.
I think there's like a king. Yeah, there's a medieval one with the knights and you're a king and there's a big banquet hall. And then there's one where everyone's in togas and that's a Roman one. And then the one I would be into, and that's the one with Josh Brolin's dad, James Brolin. He goes with a friend to Westworld. And that's where it's all Western. Yul Brynner is there playing a robot who he short circuits and he starts killing people. All the robots short circuits. It's pretty much Jurassic Park.
Yeah, yeah, like I said.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's Jurassic Park. It's a theme park where everything goes wrong.
Exactly.
Except that there are people in it, not just people checking it out, but it's an operating park. And,
yeah.
And they all start dying, and it's pretty great.
It is. It's a fantastic movie.
I mean, obviously, it's 70s, and it has its things where it's kind of hokey, and it's dated.
But still, just the idea could be remade so good.
I think it would be an awesome... It's ripe for remake, I think. And the sequel, too. I wish I could remember the name of the sequel. So there you go. That's what's new on DVD this week. What's come out in theaters, dude?
This week in theaters, we have Oz the Great and Powerful, starring James Franco, Michelle Williams, Rachel Weisz, and Mila Kunis, directed by Sam Raimi.
Man, I like all those people.
I
like every single one of those people. I really
all
do.
Of them.
But this movie looks like such a hunk of crap.
Does it? I've only seen one preview for it.
Yeah.
And it looked just kind of, I was like, okay, James Franco's a wizard.
Yeah. it just doesn't look good. It looks like another, it reminds me of Alice in Wonderland in that it's another movie with some actors in front of a green screen and everything's obviously cartoony around them. And it's like just iconography from a pre-existing story and
yes.
turned to something else and blown up and turned into something bigger.
It's a prequel.
Disney's prequel, right? Disney made film. Warner Brothers owns the rights to The Wizard of Oz. Okay.
So how does that work?
All right. Frank Baum, whatever his name is, the guy who wrote these books.
Uh-huh.
He wrote several Oz books.
Okay.
Tolkien style, J.R.R. Yeah, Tolkien. Yeah. So, Warner Brothers, they have the Wizard of Oz rights, and anything that they created for their movie, like there are some things that aren't in the Wizard of Oz, the book that they created for the movie, like the Munchkins, the land, was it
Lollipop Kids,
and their land, the Munchkin Land, they made that up for the movie. A couple other things were made up. Ruby Red Slippers, that's with Dorothy, that's in that book. Ain't gonna be no Ruby Red Slippers in this Oz Great and Powerful. Yellow Brick Road is supposed to be Wizard of Oz only. There will be a quick reference to Yellow Brick Road in this movie, apparently. But apparently the road changes colors depending on the mood of the film.
Okay, because I was about to say that they're totally standing on a yellow brick road in the movie poster.
Yeah, yeah. There's a part in the movie where probably when they get to Oz, the road will be, yellow brick road. But there's parts before where they go through other sections of the world and the road changes color depending on the mood of that section.
Okay.
So I read that's how they got around. They got around that. Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. It looks like a hunk. Who are the ladies in it again though? The three possible witches?
Michelle Williams, Rachel Weisz, and Mila Kunis.
Yeah. All that being said, I'd pretty much see anything starring those three ladies.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
Together in a film.
Uh huh. And James Franco's great. I mean,
Franco's cool, yeah.
Everything points towards this could be a good movie, except for the movie part of it.
Yeah, except for it looks like a big old piece of shit.
I mean, we got a good director, we got good actors.
Yeah, we'll see.
Can't wait for it comes out on HBO.
HBO, right? What else is coming out?
Also this week, we have Dead Man Down.
Dead Man Down!
Starring Colin Farrell. It's the worst name for a movie ever.
It's a terrible title.
It should just be called Redundancy.
Right. 2013 may be the year for terrible titles. Between The Last Exorcism...
Part 2.
What was the other one? The Haunting in Connecticut, The Ghost of Georgia.
Yes.
Horrible title.
Dead Man Down.
There's also White House Down.
White House Down.
Coming out sometime this year. An entire White House is down. And another White House under attack movie called Olympus Has Fallen. Terrible title.
Saw the preview for that.
Another terrible title. Just something else. Just preposterous titles this year. Anyway. Dead Man Down. What's the, you got a descriptor there for that one?
In New York City, a crime lord's right-hand man is seduced by one of his boss's victims, a woman seeking retribution.
That woman is Noomi Rapace.
Yes.
I think that's her last name, Rapace, something like that.
Something like that.
The Romanian, Swedish, Spanish chick from the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trilogy.
Yes.
And the director, Niels Arden Orlov, Orlev? What's his name?
Oplev? It's got, it says O-P-L-E-V.
Yeah, yeah. What is it? I was thinking
Niels Arden Oplev.
Niels Arden Oplev. Oh, that's pretty close. Swedish director, guy who directed the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trilogy. So it's reuniting those two people.
With a terrible title.
With a terrible title and Colin Farrell and Terrence Howard. Right? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The trailer for it looked okay. I was just happy that the trailer didn't do the old Inception. Wham! Wham! You know, every trailer does that now. I was just glad for once that trailer didn't do that. maybe they finally stopped with that trend.
I don't think so.
Probably not.
I think you're wrong.
Probably not.
I think you're hoping for the best and it's not going to happen.
I am an optimist in those regards. And I will be proven wrong. So that's pretty much it in theaters, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, hey, let's, we need to take a break. My beer is pretty much empty here. Wait, hold on a second.
And now it is empty.
Beer is empty. Need to get a new beer. So let's step into the Crespo Disco. Crespo Disco. All right, so I'm going to play a song. This is from a movie soundtrack. I want you guys to listen to the song. Enjoy it. It's kind of long. It's like a 7-minute track, but it wanders. It goes places. It goes on a journey. It's a very wonderful song.
Are the listeners going to be going on the journey with the song?
That's the whole idea. You go on the journey with the song. We'll meet you at the end of the journey. We'll meet you there on the other side. It'll be safe. Don't worry. We'll be safe and sound. We'll meet you on the other end of the Crespo Disco to do the Crespo Dome. So try to figure out. Take a guess what the movie is. We'll let you know when we come back. So there we go. Halfway point. It's episode 8. Can you believe it, Drew?
No.
Crazy. That means time for a new beer. So here we go, Crespo Disco. Enjoy the music. We'll be right back and goodbye. Thank you. We are recording. Hello, we are recording.
Ja.
Drew has levels. I have levels. Ja.
I have levels. Ja.
Okay, so I need to have this ready. This is where some questions are coming from.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Drew, what's that from?
What's what from?
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. You don't know?
No.
Never a fan of Welcome Back, Mr. Cotter?
Not really.
Horseshack? Ooh, Mr. Cotter. No?
Nah.
No?
Not so much.
John Travolta?
Nope.
No?
Uh-uh.
Barbarino?
No.
No. There's a Esposito, I think his name was, a Jewish Puerto Rican guy in the show.
Negatory.
No. Really?
Really.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome. That was the theme song, welcome back.
If you say so.
Welcome back, people, to Cinema Crespo Disco. That was the Crespo Disco. Hope you got down with your bad self. Anyone out there recognize what that song was from? What movie? Go ahead, we'll take answers right now. Go for it. No, you're all wrong. You're all wrong. That was the name of that song is the Lindbergh Palace Hotel Suite by Mark Mothersbaugh for the Royal Tenenbaum soundtrack.
Very nice.
Great movie, great soundtrack. Mark Mothersbaugh is the brainchild pretty much behind Devo.
Oh, okay.
And I think Devo actually still does some stuff here and there. But pretty much post-Devo, you know, in the 80s, he got into doing a lot of film scores and stuff. Does a lot of Wes Anderson movies. Very specific sound, very specific style. I actually hear a lot of his stuff now in commercials, like TV commercials, too.
Okay.
It's kind of a little off-putting. But still, so there you go. Mark Mothersbaugh from the Royal Tenenbaum soundtrack. One of my favorite songs from that soundtrack. It's very, very delightful jam. All instrumental, covering a whole bunch of different styles. So before we get into the final segment of the show, the lengthy segment, let's get some house cleaning out of the way, get some plugs out there.
House cleaning.
Chris Crespo.com. I feel like I don't say that enough. You know, please go to chriscrespo.com, chriscrespo.com. If that's Spanish, that's chriscrespo.com. Thank you very much. Please go there. I got a whole bunch of reviews. I got actual written reviews of Jack and the Giant Slayer, The Master, Snitch. That's where you can listen to the show. A whole bunch of stuff up there. So please, chriscrespo.com. Baseball, Crespo Diso. It's a thing. It's happening. Fantasy Baseball League. That I am the commissioner of. It's a free league. It's through Yahoo. I need more people to sign up. I'll be honest with you, Drew. I've been plugging this for a couple weeks now. Got a decent amount of listeners out there, decent amount of people that are checking us out, checking me out. You know, it's pretty cool. I thought it'd be a little easier to get 10, 12 people for a fantasy baseball league. I thought it would
Nobody
be.
Nobody cares about
Some people care.
Baseball, Chris.
Some people care. I do have, I think, four or five slots taken right now. So we are almost halfway there. We're still almost a month away before the season starts, before the draft starts. But people, come on. It's going to be fun. We'll do some fantasy baseball. It'll be some camaraderie. Who knows? Maybe, like, it'll build up to, like, at the end of the year, we'll have, like, a baseball Crespo Disco like get together. You know, we can meet up somewhere and maybe get some drinks or get some food or something and hang out, talk baseball and movies, talk about baseball movies.
That's assuming all these people are local.
So far most of them are. Yeah. And if they're not, hey, maybe they'll want to fly in or drive down. Who knows? It's gonna be a good time. Whatever we do, it'll be a good time. Also thinking about other cool things, like maybe I'm just thinking about it, might do t-shirts with the logo, with the baseball Crespo Disco logo that I'm working on.
Oh, very nice.
And, you know, if you're part of the league, you join up, maybe you get a free shirt with your logo on it. Maybe you get it at the end of the year, and we'll put the final standings on the back and who's a champion, something cheesy like that, you know? I don't know. It'll be fun. So there's going to be a lot of cool things to do in the Fantasy Baseball League. So hit me up on Twitter, at Crespo Disco. That's a show on Twitter. Or you can get me personally at Movie Examiner. Either way, I'll get your message. Drew, on Twitter, where are you at?
At Antihero419.
And we also got a Facebook.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Instagram. On the Instagram, we are CinemaCrespoDiso. We're all over the place. You can CinemaCrespoDiso@gmail.com. So many ways to get a hold of us, right?
Right.
Let me see. So we got that. Oh, iTunes. Hey. Have you heard about this this thing called iTunes out there? Have you heard about this? It's a pretty big deal, kind of a big deal. It's kind of sort of where the term podcasting came from, pod, iPod, things they listen to on your iPod, all that stuff. So, hey, it would be really cool if you could go to iTunes, subscribe to the show, because I know there are people that don't necessarily listen to us through iTunes. There's chriscrespo.com. There's aircheck.us. There's plenty of ways to listen to the show. But if you could, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate us 5 stars. That would be awesome. leave us a nice review. Doesn't have to be long. Just say, the show's cool. These guys rock. The end. Right? Enter. Very simple, right, Drew?
Right.
Right. So go out there, do that. That would be a big help to us. That'd be really cool. That helps with the whole iTunes algorithm thing and getting us on, you know, the big list or top 1,000 movie podcasts, you know, something like that. Would be pretty cool.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Right. So, yeah, I think that's everything, right? I think that's all the housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
That's the theme song. Thank you, Drew, for the theme song. The housekeeping theme song. So let's get into the, let's step into the Crespo Dome.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun,
dun, dun. Here we are in the Crespo Dome. Dun, 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 dun. First, we're going to start with a recap of the Oscars.
Yes, the Oscars.
Oscars were last weekend.
Yes, they were.
We watched it. We watched the whole thing, pretty much.
All the way through, minus the commercials.
Minus the commercials and a couple of the speeches and, like in the last hour, that fast-forward button got used a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can only watch people thank so many people.
Oh, my God.
So many times.
I mean, it's a 3.5-hour-plus show. Nah, come on, guys. Come on. All right, but hey, if you've been following along with the adventures of Drewster Cogburn and Chris Crespo in the cinema Crespodiso, you know that we had our Oscar ballots filled out, right? And we came up with a little system whereas pretty much you can go back and listen to our Oscar-related show, the bonus episode, where there were a game at the end in which I pretty much botched. Drew got +6 on his ballot, +6 points, meaning out of 24 categories, we would add up everything together, and I would have to get more than him to win, to get the official win. On the line was a cheeseburger dinner with all the sides and all the fixings. Out of 24 categories at the end of the night, Drew got 9 out of 24 right. 9 out of 24.
I failed miserably.
Not too hot, Drew.
It was terrible.
Not too hot. I got...
But I got 9, but you got to add my 6 to that.
So then you add your 6, absolutely. So if we add your 6 now...
Yes.
That'll give you a 15 out of 24.
Exactly.
All right, so a respectable 15 out of 24, because it was kind of a crazy Oscars. And then when you get to my ballot, you see, the thing is, I kind of got 15 out of 24, which means...
It was a push.
It was a friggin' push. No one owes nobody a cheeseburger dinner. After all
of
that.
Dead even.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess it was a pretty good handicap.
I guess so. It worked out pretty well.
Yeah.
It worked out pretty well. For somebody. Somebody doesn't owe somebody else a cheeseburger dinner. I was kind of hoping for that cheeseburger.
So was I, actually.
So 15 out of 24, not too hot. But this was a kind of a crazy Oscars because it was a rare year in which of the 6 major categories, a different movie won each category.
Yeah.
Django Unchained. Is that one? Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Django
won
best original screenplay.
Yeah, that Django won best original screenplay, which surprised pretty much everyone except for Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Of the major 6, which are the acting awards, director, best picture. Best picture went to Argo. Best director went to Ang Lee for Life of Pi. That surprised a lot of people. Life of Pi was really the big winner of the night. I think they won like 5 awards.
Yep.
Best actor went to Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln, which everyone suspects that's already 3 different movies. Lincoln, Life of Pi, Argo. Best actress went to Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook. Best supporting actor went to Christoph Waltz for Django Unchained. That's a whole other movie. And supporting actress went to Anne Hathaway for Les Mis.
Yeah.
The last time 6 different movies won those awards was 2000. It was either 2005 or 6 when Crash won Best Director.
Yeah.
And Ang Lee won Best Director for Brokeback Mountain. So the last time this happened, Ang Lee won Best Director. Last time Brokeback Mountain, I don't even think Brokeback Mountain was nominated for Best Picture. It might not have been. It might have been snubbed in that category, and Ang Lee still won. So kind of crazy. And then that's only happened like in 50 or 60 years, that's only happened like 3 times with that much diversity amongst all the movies. So in the end, really, Life of Pi, like I said, is pretty much the big winner. Let me see. Life of Pi won Best Director and then some technical stuff. It won Best Visual Effects, Best Cinematography, because it looks gorgeous. What else did it win? Best Original Score. Did have a good score, gotta say. And I think that's... Was that 6? I'm not really keeping track. Anyway, as for the show itself, Seth MacFarlane as host.
Pretty good.
I thought he was good. I thought he was entertaining.
We saw your boobs, Chris.
That's a funny song.
It was hilarious.
You know, he's getting a lot of crap for that song.
Really?
A lot.
I thought it was very tongue-in-cheek.
Well, yeah, it was. And it had the whole meta spin where William Shatner comes down on the screen. He's like,
exactly. This is what
we're looking,
you did.
We're looking into the future. Yeah. And because you did this, everyone hates you.
Exactly.
So they're couching it in spin. He's getting a lot of flack because he did a song about seeing actresses' boobs in movies. And two or three of the actresses he mentioned and the movies he mentioned were rape scenes.
Nice.
So
even better.
So he's coming under a little bit of a flack for that one. But then I think, and then also people are saying like, we saw your boobs. That's really too lowbrow. Even couched in that spin that they put it in, it's still too lowbrow for the Academy Awards. And I feel like it's almost like it's ignoring the joke. The actual joke, the actual point of the song, the whole objectification of women in movies, and you know all the actresses that he mentioned, a lot of them were in on it.
Yeah,
because they cut away to them in the audience, like mentioned how they didn't see, we haven't seen Jennifer Lawrence's boobs yet, and she gave a big thumbs up.
Yep,
Charlize Theron, like we saw your boobs in Monster, and then she made this face like, oh my god, it's so embarrassing, you know. But it was all pre-recorded stuff, and then right after that song was when Charlize Theron came out with Channing Tatum.
Yeah.
And they did a dance number, like right with Seth Rogen, Seth MacFarlane right there. So obviously it didn't offend him, the actual people that he was mentioning.
No, obviously not.
It might have offended
maybe some viewers.
Jodie Foster. The accused. That's one of the rape scenes.
Yeah.
And she wasn't there. But still, it's a good joke. I thought it was funny. But, and then, I don't know. Like a lot of people were, there's like, a lot of people saying it was misogynistic.
It was a little bit, but that was part of the fun of it.
Yeah, but is it though? On the surface, it's misogynistic, but he is a writer. I mean, he's all about subtext and having a reasoning for everything, so I'm sure there's reasons why, and people just choose to ignore those reasons. You know, they just focus on the surface level stuff, but people are just going to hate. People always got it. Every year in the Oscars, people
Somebody's
are going to
hate
on their performance anyway. Meanwhile, ratings have been up for the first time in a few years.
Nice.
And MacFarlane has already said he doesn't want to do it again.
Awesome.
So
he didn't have any fun.
Or not enough. Yeah, yeah. Not enough fun. Didn't get paid enough. Too much scrutiny. Something turned him off. He's like, I'm done with this. Which I think is a shame because I thought he did.
I thought he did a really good job.
I thought he did pretty good. I think he's doing pretty well for himself for a guy who apparently he moved to L.A. when he was like 21. Had like a bowl haircut. You know, with just some ridiculous writer trying to get it big in L.A. Now he reinvented himself and then this whole singing, dancing, you know, celebrity.
Yeah,
he's got a whole bunch of TV shows. Hey, good for him. Good for him, you know. I guess I am a fan of his, and I like Ted and Family Guy and all that, so I guess I was predisposed to liking him as a host. Probably on the flip side, people that don't like that stuff, probably ready to hate on him.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Anyway. Anyway, as for the show itself, I thought I was right. It was the Oscars. Like, who cares?
Here, have some shiny gold thing.
Here's a naked gold man. Winning at the Oscars, best documentary was Searching for Sugar Man. Which we saw this week. So let's go ahead and talk about Searching for Sugar Man. That's the that documentary is about this guy named Rodriguez who made a couple albums in the early 70s. Those albums went nowhere in America, but in South America became huge underground hits. South Africa became huge underground hits during apartheid. And actually, the way the movie kind of presents it as like, this guy's music almost helped fuel the protests and the rebellion against the government and against apartheid. You know, and they spread his music around and inspired them to form their own bands and stuff. And then some guys in the 90s, like, they set out to find out who this Rodriguez guy was. They heard rumors that he killed himself on stage. And it's pretty wild. And then the movie does the whole story. It's like, it's their search, where Rodriguez is, what he's doing, what he's been doing in all those years. And it's really, really, really well made.
Yeah, it was a really, really interesting movie. I can't believe that somebody who, you know, just made a couple albums in the States.
Right.
Good music, too.
All the music in the movie was
which
his.
Which is why I'm surprised we've never heard of this guy before.
Mm-hmm.
Went nowhere here and fueled a cultural revolution in another country.
That is wild.
Away.
That is wild. And I found it interesting how they interviewed a lot of the people that he worked with, like engineers and, you know,
producers. Everybody's like, he was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, we had every... everyone, we all heard his music and we're like, this is awesome. And we recorded it and we tried to sell it and nobody bought
it. And these are guys that worked with, like, they go over their credits like, oh yeah, they worked with Zeppelin, Cream, Hendrix, you know, like the biggest, the best, the biggest names ever. And then they're all like, I'd put Rodriguez in my top five artist ever. It was like, what?
And nobody's ever heard of
no
him.
No one's ever heard of this guy, but he should have been huge. He had everything going for him, and for some reason it just didn't happen.
He's kind of a strange dude.
He is a strange guy, personally. It definitely comes across that way. And that's probably why the music is so good. And why the music holds up, because we did it in the 70s. Hearing it now in 2013, it sounds like good stuff, you know? I definitely want that soundtrack, because that soundtrack is pretty much the greatest hits of his, like, two or three albums. Two albums. So it's like 13 songs from the two albums. I might as well just get that.
Might as well.
Boil it down to his essence. But yeah, good stuff. Searching for Sugarman. Definitely understand why it won Best Documentary.
Yeah, I wish I could have seen it in theaters.
Right? Yeah, I think it played here at the Enzion for a little while.
And wasn't it done by the same guys who did Man on Wire?
Produced by one of the producers was the same producer of Man on Wire.
Awesome movie too.
Excellent, excellent documentary. All right, well, we got a few questions for the Crespo Dome, so let's answer a few of these questions and then we'll get out of here.
Okay,
we'll wrap it up. Let's see here. I'm gonna start with it's time for our weekly questions from Billy.
Billy D.
And this one is ridiculously long. Drew, look how long this is. Look at that. See all that?
Oh, come on, Bill. You gotta keep it short and concise, bro.
Hey, guys, this may get long. Feel free to not read the whole thing for the sake of brevity. No shit if brevity isn't your thing, dude. Yeah, Big Lebowski reference. No shit. Feel free to not read the whole thing. All right. So I'm going to have to break some of this stuff down. Because there's several questions in here. What did you think about the visual effects industry controversies and disputes in the wake of the Oscars? All right. Rhythm and Hughes won Best Visual Effects for Life of Pi.
Uh-huh.
So at the same time, while people from Rhythm and Hughes were on stage accepting the award for Best Visual Effects, the Academy Award, the company itself is going bankrupt.
Oh, very nice.
The visual effects industry in Hollywood is itself going through a crisis right now. A lot of people are protesting because filmmakers are demanding that visual effects cost less money.
Uh-huh.
And they don't seem to understand that visual effects in Hollywood are already being made at a cut rate price.
Okay.
They're already charging as little as they can.
Okay.
And a lot of them are going under. And they can't get more money for their work. They're reluctant to pay them more. When Ang Lee accepted Best Director, he thanked everyone under the stars except for
the visual effects people.
Very weird. Very strange to do that on a night when they won.
Yeah.
But it's probably because... And then they started... You know how they were traditionally at the Academy Awards when the speech goes along, they start playing people off.
Yeah.
Then obviously the least well-known you are, the less well-known you are, the quicker they are going to be to play you off. The visual effects people started talking about what was happening in the industry. When they accepted their award, they thanked a bunch of people, and then they started going into this is what's going on.
And here's the music. And
here comes the Jaws theme to play you off. Yeah, so. It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird.
It is.
But, you know, hey, that's what happens.
Well, it just means we're going to have some really ugly movies coming up.
Possible. It's possible. I mean, Rhythm and Hughes are a huge company. They've done a lot of legendary stuff. And, you know, if they are going under, I don't know, there's not much hope for the industry itself. So we'll see what happens. We'll see how it affects films down the road. In a related question, thoughts on giving a cinematography award to a film that was composed entirely of green screen footage over outstanding work by Roger Deakins on Skyfall and Robert Richardson on Django? Life of Pi won Best Cinematography. A lot of it was CGI. It's like... they did the whole thing where they had a boat, like a little life raft on a gimbal.
Uh-huh.
And then they had the actor in there, and then it was the tank itself was all blue so they could remove it and put in the water in the background and everything. Actually, they made the world's largest water tank for this film that had like 12-foot high blue screen walls.
Oh, wow.
That they could then put in all the backgrounds, the very picturesque guys.
Yeah.
So basically, a cinematography award went to...
A guy who didn't do a lot of cinematography.
A guy who had to light the real elements that were there, which is the boat and the actor, and then have that be ready to have the people go in and do the digital work. Now, the entire movie isn't done on green screen. There's a narrative framing device in the film where a reporter is talking to the grown-up. The kid's name is Pi. That's Life of Pi. The kid's name is Pi. And the reporter is talking to the grown-up Pi, and Pi is telling him his story of what happened with the tiger and the boat and all that. And all that stuff, that's not filmed in front of green screens. That's filmed in a kitchen and then in a park. That's all real locations, and all that stuff looks very nice. In the very beginning, they film in a zoo, real animals in a zoo, and all that stuff looks very, very nice. It's really all the stuff that's on a boat, which admittedly is like an hour of the movie. You know, it's a beautiful film. And then this isn't the first time this has happened. It's not the first time a digitally created film has won Best Cinematography. Avatar, a few years ago, won Best Cinematography. That movie is even more
completely digital.
Completely digital. You know, that one is people on with suits and dots on them, you know, and replaced. And so how do you give that a cinematography award? You know, but they did. So they've come a long way to accepting digital effects in films. When Tron came out in 82, they refused to give it nomination for visual effects because they said at that time using computers was cheating. Yep, back then in 82. Come a long way.
Oh yeah.
Come a very, very long way. Let's see. This long paragraph. This guy phone shot on film. Oh, no. He's giving his opinion about what he thinks. I'm gonna skip all that. So I ask, is it now a sign that shooting on film is no longer a valued edge over competition in the minds of Academy voters, seeing as they just vote on what looks the best? Well, yeah, obviously.
Well, I mean, if that's the case, they're just voting on what looks the best. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Unfortunately. You just answered your own question there, buddy.
Yep. Yes, you did. This one is for Doc. Dr. Drew. As I mentioned earlier, Dr. Drew. How angry does it make it... How angry does it make you when Chris says cray?
It makes me want to murder him while he sleeps. Like, it's just one of those things. It just gets underneath my skin like a bad bug or something. I just want to smack him from across the table. That's how angry it makes me, Billy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Interesting response. I thought Seth MacFarlane could have been worse. Billy D. That's how he signs off. So there you go,
he
Billy.
He totally could have been worse.
Much, much worse.
He also could have been a little better.
But overall, though, good show.
We'll see what happens next year. We got a whole year to see what happens. All right, moving on. We got another. Looks like we got a question here on Facebook.
The Book of Faces.
The Book of Faces.
There's so many faces in that book.
This is from a Facebook user, Movie Joint. I don't think it's that kind of joint. What's the street date for the movie? What's the street date? What's the street date for the movie 43 Blu-ray? And will there be deleted scenes I couldn't see in theaters? Movie 43, remember that one?
Yeah.
The comedy thing,
compilation.
That
weirdos.
Anthology comedy that took 4 years to make, and
it's
a bunch of people just doing favors or friends, and then they released it, and no one wanted anything to do with it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think that's a bit of a facetious question, because obviously no one cares about movie 43.
Well, I mean, I don't know when the street date's going to be, but I guarantee you, because the type of movie that it is, that there's almost guaranteed to be quote-unquote deleted scenes, because that's the kind of raunchy, weird movie they're trying to portray this as.
Yeah, they'll call it the unrated version.
Exactly. So I almost guarantee from just a marketing perspective that it would probably be in there.
That is just a terrible question. You know, take movie 43. This one comes from Twitter. @MattCellery is asking about a Wonder Woman movie. He said he heard that a Wonder Woman movie was being made. Do we know anything about that? Wonder Woman movie has been rumored, but in pre-production hell for years. Years. They came close to making a TV show. That one pretty recently, that fell apart. They came close to doing a movie recently where they who was, I think it was going to be with Megan Fox, and they released a picture of her in like a new suit, and it looked horrible, and people hated it, and then the movie never got made. First time we'll see Wonder Woman will probably be the Avengers, not the Avengers.
Justice League.
Justice League, the opposite of the Avengers, their mirror image. Justice League movie, first time we see Wonder Woman and Flash, and then based on that, we'll probably get a spin-off Wonder Woman movie.
Standalone.
But does anyone really want to see a Wonder Woman movie?
I mean, personally, me, probably not.
Probably not, right?
I don't know about anybody else, though.
Hey, people like stuff.
No, exactly.
So you got to give them stuff to watch.
Yep.
If you make a good movie, you make a good movie, right?
Exactly.
You got to give them a shot. I don't know. I don't think anyone's really clamoring all that much, though. All right, this one comes from Joseph in Miami. He's asking... All right, he wants to know about... He has a couple questions. Actually, he has a few questions. He wants to know about our favorite actors in certain film franchises.
Okay.
So, for example, like, who would be your favorite Batman of all the Batmans? Let's review the Batman. First, let's review the Batman. We got 1960s absurdist Batman, Adam West.
Yes.
Then we have late 80s, early 90s, broody comedian Michael Keaton.
Yes.
And then we have...
Who was a good Batman, not a very good Bruce Wayne.
And then we have blonde-haired Val Kilmer.
Better Bruce Wayne than he was a Batman.
Then we have ER era George Clooney.
Very terrible at both.
And then we have Welsh-born actor Christian Bale.
And then we have a winner in both categories.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to go with Christian Bale.
You're going with the Welsh?
Only because he can pull off both Bruce Wayne and Batman effectively.
Yeah, I have to agree with that assessment. I really do like Michael Keaton.
He was a terrible Bruce Wayne.
I thought he was an okay Wayne. It was, well, for the time, it was a very broody Wayne. When you look back on it now, it's not as brooding and gritty as it was then. Now it almost seems like a romp of a movie with the Joker dancing around the Prince songs and stuff.
Now with Christian Bale as Bruce Wayne, I just assume that Bruce Wayne is just his character from American Psychopath.
American Psycho. I do have a problem with his Batman voice, though. His grumbly Batman
Everybody
voice.
Everybody has a problem with all their Batman voices. They all sound really stupid.
Well, Michael Keaton just dropped his register. He didn't, like, and Val Kilmer, too, they both just talked with deeper voices, but they didn't, like, grumble.
He's down constipated.
The problem with George Clooney was that he didn't change his voice at all.
At all.
He kept the exact same voice. That made no sense.
Nope.
You know, apparently, according to him now, this could be, you know, his own memory. According to him, he shows up to at Warner Brothers. I think it's Warner Brothers that made these movies, right? Yeah, he shows up in the, you know, studio's office, and they're like, you're Batman. And he's like,
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't audition for it, he didn't want it, but they gave it to him, so he took it.
Yeah.
And now he's like, I am sorry.
I was the worst Batman ever.
I'm going to have to, I think I'm going to agree with you on Christian Bale. I'm going to go with Bale. Favorite James Bond? Let's go over to Bonds. Okay, we got George Clooney as James Bond. No, we don't. As the first American James Bond. We have Sean Connery, right? The original James Bond, Sean Connery.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we have George Lazenby, who did one movie, male model turned actor.
Yeah, was dead.
Then you have Roger Moore,
who
was 80 years old when he started playing Bond, and then did it for about 50 years.
Yep.
Then you have Timothy Dalton,
who
did two whole movies in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Then Pierce Brosnan, the Thomas Crown Affair of James Bond's.
Yes.
And now Daniel Craig, blonde-haired, blue-eyed James Bond. People made a big deal about blonde-haired James Bond.
I don't really care that much. I mean, it does go against James Bond. But then again, you see, you're kind of comparing apples to oranges.
Yes.
Because this whole...
You're kind of comparing watermelons...
Yeah,
because
especially nowadays with the new Bond, like, they pretty much almost rebooted the franchise with Daniel Craig.
They
kind of took it from the beginning.
It's like the Bond identity.
Exactly. Yeah. So they kind of took it from the beginning and are showing how Bond was before he became, you know, the super smooth.
Right.
It took him three movies
to get to Bond as we know him.
Exactly.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you look at it in that light, I'm going to have to pick both Daniel Craig and Sean Connery because, I mean...
Craig and Connery. Greg and Connery, okay.
I mean, Sean Connery just likes to schmack a bitch every
once in a while. Sometimes you have to schmack a woman.
You just have to schmack her.
Sometimes you give her the last word, and then she takes the last word, but then she keeps talking, so sometimes you have to smack her. Yes, Sean Connery did admit to Barbara Walters in the 90s that sometimes you have to smack a woman. Just YouTube it. We here at Cinema Crest Produce, so do not condone violence against women.
Yeah, no, not at all, but it's really funny.
We do condone.
Sean Connery say that.
We do condone listening to Sean Connery say crazy things, so that's for sure. Sometimes Drew, you just have to, sometimes you just have to smack a Drewster. Because you give Drew the last word and he won't take it. You will take it, and then you gotta smack him.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to smack you if you say cray one more time.
This is just getting cray.
Oh, I'm gonna hurt you while you sleep.
Favorite Jack Ryan? Do you have a favorite Jack Ryan? Let's go over to Jack Ryan. Okay. So here we go. We got Alec Baldwin in The Hunt for Red October.
Uh-huh.
And then you have Harrison Ford in Clear and Present Danger in Patriot Games.
Yeah.
Then you have Ben Affleck in Some of All Fears, where in post 9/11. They made a movie where a nuclear device went off at a football game and took out the southern part of the United States. Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. And now we have upcoming, which we haven't seen yet, a Jack Ryan movie called Jack Ryan, starring Chris Pine as Jack Ryan. So obviously we can't count that one because we haven't seen how Chris Pine's going to do. So those are your options. You got.
I'm going to go with Harrison Ford.
You're going to go with Harrison Ford's awesome.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Harrison.
Harrison Ford's awesome. I would put Hunt for Red October as a movie over
the other movies. But Alec Baldwin in that movie wasn't that good.
It was okay.
It took Alec Baldwin a long time to become a good actor.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he had his spurts. He's great in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, he is.
But it's only one scene, and then he can give a lot of that credit to David Mamet and his awesome writing. Beetlejuice?
Yeah, like I said, it wasn't that good. Shadow.
He's fine. Oh, Shadow's awful. Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of Hollywood agents?
Alec Baldwin does.
Alec Baldwin knows. But yeah, now people love him. He's doing all those
parodies,
Capital One commercials,
which are actually quite funny.
Oh, he's funny. He's a funny guy. Seriously, Harrison Ford, I'm going to agree. I'll have to agree because it's a grumpy old Harrison Ford. But before he got really old and grumpy, he was just kind of old and grumpy. Now he's really old and grumpy.
Oh, really grumpy.
He's a grumpy, grumpy old man. Joseph's next question. Terminator versus RoboCop. Who wins?
Which Terminator are we talking about?
I think we're talking about traditional T-800.
Okay.
Roboskeleton Terminator.
Okay.
You know, but without the Arnold flesh. Just
straight up skeleton.
Just the robo underneath. Versus RoboCop.
Versus RoboCop.
Yes, the gun in the sky.
Now is this RoboCop before he regained
original
his
RoboCop
humanity?
Original RoboCop. RoboCop at the end of RoboCop 1. So yeah, he's like, call me Murphy.
Okay.
Yeah. He knows his name is Alex Murphy.
Okay.
Yeah. Versus a Terminator who probably just zones in on the human part of RoboCop.
Here, your eyes you can't see.
Right. Yeah, he is.
But RoboCop could do the same thing with his stupid little. I mean,
yeah, he has that whole.
I love how they make the robots skeletons. So like they have those beady red eyes that you can just shoot out, and apparently they're blind.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, I'll go with RoboCop just because he has a gun in his thigh.
Because he has a thigh gun.
Yeah. I mean, are we going both these straight out the factory here? Because, I mean, if so, then...
No, because RoboCop at the end of RoboCop, straight out of the factory. No, not straight out of the factory. He's, like, already broken all his directives, and he's no longer a slave to OCP. The Terminator, he's come from the future, but can you get through with a weapon? No, you can't get through with a weapon, so he has to get a weapon. He has to get a modern-day weapon. Which, I mean, so he's a Terminator. He can get whatever he wants. RoboCop has Ed 209 in his corner.
Yeah.
Ed 209. Yeah, enforcement drone 209. You have 10 seconds to comply. I'm going to go with RoboCop because he has Ed 209. And Terminator has to find a gun.
Yeah.
And RoboCop comes with a gun plus Ed 209.
And it's going to be hard to find a gun when you're, you know, a giant platinum skeleton.
Right. I mean, you just got to be busting through walls and... Yeah, it's kind of hard to hide. I like to see a movie about a giant skeleton with like an overcoat, a trench coat, and a hat, just trying to hide and steal a gun.
Sounds like a terrible movie.
And finally, Joseph wants to know our thoughts on the Evil Dead remake. Have you seen the trailer yet for the Evil Dead remake?
No, I have not.
You should check it out. It looks pretty interesting. It looks pretty interesting.
So what do you think about it, Chris?
You know, Sam Raimi's producing it, so that's a step in the right direction. The trailer's pretty intense. I mean, it makes it look like it's going to be a pretty grueling, gruesome movie. The poster is proclaiming this will be the most terrifying film experience you ever have. That's what they're trying to promise. And it's an intense trailer. It looks grimy and gross, you know, and kind of Evil Dead-ish. But it also kind of has that modern remake look to it. Horror remake, like the Texas Chainsaw, Last House on the Left, Hills of Eyes. They all have the same kind of look to them, you know. This kind of looks like it might share that look. I hope it doesn't share the same aesthetics, because all those movies stink.
Yeah.
We'll see. I do know. Okay, we've seen the original Evil Dead.
Of course.
There's a scene, there's an infamous scene in which a girl gets raped by a tree.
Yes.
Very unpleasant.
Yes.
Sam Raimi has come out now. Raimi obviously made that movie when he was very young, like early 20s. You know, he's trying to
freak you out.
Trying to freak you out and push the envelope. Now he's an older man. I think he's even a father, children of his own. Now he regrets the tree rape.
Yes.
He's like, if I would go back and made that movie now, I would not have included that. But the trailer for this remake hints at
a tree rape.
Tree rape. So even though he's a producer, I don't know how much input he had on it. If he did, and they're like, we want to do the tree rape, he was fine with it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Obviously, though, the movie is not going to be PG-13. So Grade just
R.
I just say thank goodness for that, because I'm really sick of these PG-13 horror films.
Yeah, they're usually pretty terrible.
Yeah, we're literally trying to scare children. That's great. I'm an adult, please. I know about real world horrors. Please try to scare me
with a
movie. I like to see you try. Hasn't happened in years. Years, I say, was last time I was scared by a movie, and I want it to happen. I want to be freaked out. Something, anything. Too much to ask, Drew.
Sometimes,
maybe.
Maybe. I mean, yeah. I mean, at the extreme end of that side is, do you really want to watch Visitor Q again?
Oh no, that's not horror. That's not scaring me.
Yes, it is.
No,
that's
just no. That's just disturbing you. That's just trying to mess with your psyche, you know.
And it totally did.
Yeah. No, that's not a movie I want to rewatch.
I've never been the same, Chris.
Yeah. See, I like rewatching The Exorcist every now and then.
Well, it's because it's not scary.
No, I mean, when I saw it in. I saw it in theaters, a re-release in theaters. It gets scary then at times. Like,
I'm sure.
The tension and the atmosphere, and you're in a giant dark room with a bunch of other people that are all, you know, like breathing. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it gets tense, you know. It's a really well-made movie, but I don't know. Movies these days, they don't make them like they used to. Sure they do. Of course they do. Just not horror films. All right, well, I'm going over my list here. I think that's everything. I think we're done. I think we're done with episode 8. So there you go, Drewster.
Stamped approved on the books.
Stamped in the books. Thanks for doing the show, buddy.
You're welcome, I guess.
How are those jams and preserves coming along?
The jams haven't started yet, or the preserve. The oil's done.
The oregano oil?
Yes, the oregano oil.
Nice.
Cinema Crespediso oregano oil.
If you want a jar of Drewster Cogburn made Cinema Crespediso oregano oil for $30 a jar.
I can't sell it.
For $30 a jar you can sell it.
No, I can't. Not legally.
For $50 we'll sell you a jar.
I can't do it.
All right, look, for $100 we'll meet you. We'll meet you in a parking lot.
It's not legal.
Listen, that's why.
I cannot sell food.
That's why I'm saying.
It wasn't made in an industrial
kitchen. That's why I'm
saying.
For $100
I can't do it.
We'll meet with you in a parking lot. You put the money in an envelope. You just put it in the hood of your car. We'll leave a bag on the ground and we'll drive away. And then we're just going to drive away. All right, so you're just giving us money because you like us and you want the show to succeed. And we're just leaving a bag on the ground because we're forgetful people.
Yeah.
And you can claim that bag and the jar of oregano oil that's inside. Right? For free. Right?
Sure. We're
not selling nothing. Not selling nothing. It's pretty simple. Pretty simple. Thank you for listening so much. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Tell your neighbors to tell their friends. You know, two people tell two people. They tell two people, and so forth and so forth and so forth. Before you know it, Drew and I are billionaires.
Yes.
So that's what we're
going for.
That's what we're aiming for, guys. We need your help to do it.
Billionaires.
Podcasting billionaires.
Billions of pennies.
I want that Adam Carolla money. All right.
That's not a lot of money.
Well, he's got the biggest podcast out there.
Oh, really?
Yep. Number one podcast, Adam Carolla podcast. I want to get some of that Chris Hardwick Nerdist money.
Yeah.
He's got dozens of dollars.
Dozens. I wish I had dozens of dollars.
So, thanks for listening. Remember, iTunes, rate us, subscribe, rate, review, chriscrespo.com, at Twitter, at CrispoDiso, Drew, at Antihero419.
Correct.
He loves tweeting. Follow him. He loves it.
Don't.
Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week for episode 9. That's a niner.
Almost double digits. And then almost there.
And then we'll be getting to the double digits. And before you know it, Spaceship Crespo Diso taking over the world. Baseball Crespo Diso. Sign up, guys. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, we're out of here. Have a good one, guys. Talk to you soon.